We're doing work on just logistically how we would get the bushmasters there in the numbers that they needed.
Australia provides new help to Ukraine. It's Monday, April 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, war's mental health impact. New COVID fight. Cambodia disabled artist displays hope. A change of space command. Music transcends war. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia says it will send armored vehicles to Ukraine after a plea for much-needed military aid from its president, Volodymyr Zelensky, which he made during an address to the Australian Parliament. Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us more.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told lawmakers in Australia by video link Thursday from Ukraine that those fighting against evil must be armed. He urged Australia to send Bushmaster armoured personnel carriers that are made by a French company, Thales, in the Victorian city of Bendigo. They're built to carry up to 10 soldiers safely through conflict zones. They have extensive ballistic protection and a V-shaped floor, designed to disperse the blast of explosive devices more effectively than a conventional flat floor. Defence Minister Peter Dutton said Friday that planning for the deliveries is underway, although Australian officials haven't confirmed how many vehicles would be sent or when.
We're doing work on just logistically how we would get the bushmasters there in the numbers that they need. Even on one of the huge planes, you can probably only put three, maybe four. Normally we'd put them on a ship and they could sail, but I just don't think we've got those sort of timelines. So we're very, very much open to the request.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has denounced Russia's brutal, illegal and unjustified invasion of Ukraine. Australia has already sent missiles and humanitarian supplies to Ukraine, now about a month into a war with Russia. Canberra has imposed sanctions on hundreds of Russian politicians, military commanders and business people. It will now impose a 35% tariff on imports from Russia and Belarus. Morrison called the steps the largest ever imposition of sanctions by Australia against a single country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You'll find much more on this story and all the stories you hear on today's program by following us online. Join us at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook and our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Why the United States and Philippines are staging large-scale military exercises. Thailand and southern insurgent group to halt violence during Ramadan. Shanghai separates COVID-positive children from parents in virus fight. Survey shows young Taiwanese lack savings and are highly indebted. How China's TikTok and Facebook influencers push propaganda. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more. Visit us at VOA Asia Facebook, also on Instagram, Twitter, and voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. As Russia's invasion of Ukraine enters its second month, social media and television outlets continue to broadcast disturbing images and news about the conflict. And that is raising concern about the impact such reporting is having on children's mental health. Anna Rice has the story.
Extreme anxiety, irritability, eating disorders, and insomnia. The effects of Russia's invasion in Ukraine on the mental health of children and teenagers can be extremely grave, psychologists warn. And it doesn't matter whether the children are in the middle of military action or across the world from it.
For younger kids, we worry a little bit more because younger kids do have a harder time separating what's happening in other places in the world to other kids from what's happening to them.
Psychologists say regardless of the child's age, it is important and necessary to talk to them about the invasion.
So I think for parents, it's recognizing that kids are going to get this information, but we want to make sure that it's information that they can digest. And if it's information that it's above their developmental level, or if it's information that isn't vetted by parents, then it actually can lead to mood changes or changes in anxiety, or kids being more irritable or clingy, or you know, you might start seeing changes in appetite or sleeping.
Ukrainian Tatiana Butler has been living in the U.S. for the past 13 years, together with her husband and two sons. But her parents, brothers and sisters are still back home in Ukraine. Since the start of the invasion, she has tried to answer when her boys ask her why people are being killed in Ukraine.
They couldn't understand why their grandmother and grandfather were hiding in the basement, why we see destroyed houses and damaged cars in the news. As a mom, it's very painful for me to show these images to my kids, but I understand I need to show them what's happening.
Crisis situations also provide an opportunity to teach children how to help those in need. Tatiana's 10-year-old son Vitaly, for example, painted an anti-war sign in support of Ukraine and together with his parents and brother took part in a protest in Washington.
When I watch the news and I see Russian people or military attacking some people, I feel angry at them for doing that. I don't know why they can't just be in peace. Like they have been for years. There's no need for violence. There's no need for war.
Russian Nina Davis, who lives in New Jersey, also feels it's extremely important to talk to her 15-year-old son about Russia's aggression in Ukraine.
Мне было очень важно, чтобы у него не было какого-то.
It was important for me to make sure he doesn't feel personally ashamed, because neither me nor him are to blame. Not all Russians are bad.
Talking and support are especially important for children who are in the middle of military action and see horrible things no child should ever see.
You do have incredible risk to emotional and behavioral wellness for these kids. So then how can we balance it out, right? Having a loving, caring, supportive a family, having a caring, supportive, you know, parent who can, amidst all the changes and uncertainty, how can we keep certain things as predictable as possible?
But above all, psychologists say parents need to repeat, both to themselves and their children, that war inevitably comes to an end, and this one is no exception. VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, a renewed push to fight COVID. Happening now in Asia, armed troops in Sri Lanka blocked a Sunday opposition protest march staged in defiance of an emergency curfew after authorities imposed a social media blackout to contain public dissent. Sri Lanka is facing severe shortages of food and fuel amid sharp price rises and crippling power cuts. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for spending time with us today on VOA Asia. President Joe Biden urged U.S. lawmakers to approve tens of billions of dollars to fight the coronavirus, of which $5 billion is earmarked for America's global response. Biden, who received his second booster shot last week, warned that failure to get this funding means the United States and the world is risking backsliding. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington.
Americans may think they're done with the pandemic, President Joe Biden said as he rolled up his sleeve Wednesday for his second booster shot.
It didn't hurt a bit.
But that could not be further from the truth, he warned. Biden has asked Congress for $5 billion in funding for the global pandemic response and more for COVID-19 testing and vaccines at home.
Congress, we need to secure additional supply now. Now. We can't wait until we find ourselves in the midst of another surge to act. It'll be too late. And we also need this funding to continue our efforts to vaccinate the world with commitments we made. It's critical to our ability to protect against new variants. There's no wall you can build high enough to keep out a virus.
As many Americans contemplate their second booster shot, an additional layer of protection now available to Americans over 50, top global health officials on Wednesday sounded the alarm that the pandemic remains a global threat, as many people have yet to receive a first vaccine dose.
We don't subscribe to the view that there should be a different standard for people in rich countries versus others. If we need it for the high and upper middle income countries, we need it for everyone.
This inequality has been especially dire in the developing world, where the lack of vaccines and treatments has forced governments to impose other measures to try to stop the spread. The UN Children's Agency warns that 147 million children missed more than half of their in-person schooling over the past 2 years because of pandemic-related disruptions. And human rights groups say they worry that, amid rising lockdowns in countries like China, some governments have used the viral threat to crack down on freedoms. With watchdog Amnesty International warning that the situation has led to deeper inequality and greater instability. The last 2 years, Biden said, have been a global battle against this mutating virus. And although many Americans see it in the rearview mirror, for hundreds of millions of people around the world, the fight continues. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Be sure to check out more on VOA Asia social media.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong has lifted its ban on foreign flights from 9 countries, part of a general relaxing of restrictions as the city's worst coronavirus outbreak of the pandemic has apparently abated. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're back with more VOA Asia. The Cambodian artist Morn Chir is having something of a moment in the art world, with exhibits in Phnom Penh and the U.S. cities of Seattle and Denver. On canvas and with block prints, he is challenging prejudices against people with disabilities. VOA Scott Stearns has our story from Colorado, with VOA Khmer's Sukumono Khan and Sochita Han in Cambodia.
At home in his Siem Reap studio, Morn Chir paints in the mornings, before inking lino-cut blocks with his wife, Poon Tu, to make individual black-and-white prints.
My talent in art, as I remember, began when I was a young boy drawing in the soil. I didn't dream of being an artist when I grew up. But after the accident, when I became disabled, I started to learn art skills from a local NGO, Epic Art.
12 years ago, Morn Chia was burned in an electrical accident on a building site, leading to the amputation of both his arms below the elbow.
When I was in the village, I thought I was alone. I saw some people were struggling more than me. That made me want to live my life and work hard.
4 years ago, Morn Chia met Seattle artist Lauren Ida, who was working in Cambodia, and opened her studio to local artists.
At first he was just drawing, he drew the first block and then I chiseled it. And then the second time he said, oh, I think I can do that. Let me try. So we weighted it down with something heavy on the end. So he had something to push against. And now he's very prolific. So he's creating larger blocks, very highly detailed blocks. He's painting a lot more with acrylic on canvases.
The painting that shows me with the butterfly wings illustrates the turning point in my life. From a rural boy in the rice field who didn't know the city and didn't know many people. Then, when I turn to art, my life changes.
He often finds these very sweet metaphors that are from his own life and puts them into the artwork. Like this one is about the hangers. The idea is that they look flimsy, but they actually are really strong because they need to be strong to hold up the heavy, wet clothes. And that's a metaphor for himself because he looks disabled, but he doesn't feel disabled, and he's a lot stronger than he looks.
After the accident, his uncle gave him a job raising ducks, an experience reflected in Sometimes Happy, Sometimes Difficult, on display at the Denver show, curated by Shanna Shelby.
It was hot, difficult work, but he was grateful for the job. And so just this sentiment that sometimes happy, sometimes difficult, I think resonates with so many different people.
The disenfranchisement of people with disabilities is reflected in Wishing for Inclusion. And he reflects a chaotic calm in Tangled.
I love that the fish is in a big, huge mess, but still is beautiful. And so, I kind of relate to that in our world that is a big mess, but still we have this beautiful fish. It's simple, but it's touching. It's really lovely.
Mornchia says his art and his accident are inseparable parts of his story.
I changed the mindset of people who used to think that with a disability, I could not do anything besides being a beggar or fed by others.
Mornchia is part of the Open Studio Cambodia Collective that provides marketing, supplies, and exhibition opportunities in promotion of Cambodian contemporary art. With Sokum Mano Khan and Sochita Hian in Cambodia, Scott Stearns, VOA News, Denver.
Making headlines in Asia, Malaysian Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob and Indonesian President Joko Widodo observed the signing of a Memorandum of Understanding on the protection of Indonesian migrant workers in Malaysia, while Yaakob was on an official visit to Jakarta. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a new microgravity ceremony ushers in a new commander of the International Space Station. An old space telescope finds something new in the cosmos, and a futuristic helmet to study astronauts' brain waves. Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
We begin on board the International Space Station, where cosmonaut Anton Shkaplerov handed command of the ISS to astronaut Thomas Marshburn. Shkaplerov acknowledged political tensions on Earth while praising unity in space. Marshburn returned pleasantries.
And Anton, it's an honor and a privilege to accept command of the International Space Station and continuing the international partnership and that legacy in spaceflight.
The ceremony signaled the change from Expedition 66 to Expedition 67, the newest mission of the ISS, which started upon this undocking of a Soyuz spacecraft. On board were Shkaplerov, fellow cosmonaut Pyotr Dubrov, and NASA's Mark Vandehei, who spent a record 355 days on the ISS. The trio landed safely in Kazakhstan despite strong winds blowing the capsule on its side. SpaceX is scheduled to deliver their replacements in about 3 weeks. The Expedition 66 crew returned to Earth amid heightened tensions between Western powers and Russia over Moscow's ongoing war on Ukraine. In other news, astronomers spotted the farthest star yet, courtesy of the Hubble Space Telescope. They nicknamed it Arendel, which means morning star in Old English.
We have been working under the assumption that the light we're seeing is just from one massive star. And with that assumption, it works out that it would have to be at least 50 times the mass of the sun. So it's a really big, really massive star.
Astronomers made the discovery using a technique called gravitational lensing, where galaxies closer to us work as a lens to magnify smaller objects in the background. Researchers say Arendelle formed in nearly 13 billion years ago, roughly 900 million years after the Big Bang that formed our universe. A star named Icarus previously held the record for the oldest one discovered, having formed nearly 9.5 billion years ago. Finally, a 4-year-old Israeli startup named BrainSpace will send to space a helmet that measures brain activity.
This system does not depend on any technician, does not require any preparation or any special process to wear it. Just click on a button and it's done, and you can start measuring brain activity.
The company plans to compare data of brain activity on Earth with that in space. BrainSpace's helmet is set to board a SpaceX and Axiom space flight next week on the first ever all-private trip to the ISS, where 3 of the 4 space travelers will wear it. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Studies using data gathered by various NASA Mars missions have shown that the red planet once had an abundance of liquid water flowing across its surface early in its history. Subsequent findings suggested that due to a variety of factors, many unknown, the water evaporated into space about 3 billion years ago. Researchers Alan Leask and Bethany Ellman from Caltech in Pasadena, California, recently found evidence that liquid water remained on Mars for about 1 billion years longer than previously thought. Using data gathered by NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, the scientists found evidence that salt minerals left by the water date to about 2 billion years ago. The researchers' findings have been detailed in a new study that was published in the journal AGU Advances. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The friendship of Ukrainian musician Valeriva Shokolova and Russian musician Nikita Morozov transcends the fighting between their countries. For VOA News, Jakub Baluzzi has the story.
I just decided one day when I was 9 years old that I'm going to become a cellist, and this was the coolest thing I could do with my life.
31-year-old Valeria Sholokova is from Ukraine. She moved to the U.S. 20 years ago, but she still has her homeland in her heart.
There's nothing like watching your home burn down. I felt horrible for the next few days, just shattered. And everything hurt. I mean, it was grief.
Sholokova still has her father, relatives, and friends in Ukraine. She says the images from Ukraine make her cry every day. But in the middle of her torment, a friend reached out.
He reached out to me first. It was a very genuine, touching message. Just saying that, you know, that he's heartbroken and that he's with and he feels my grief.
Nikita Morozov is a 35-year-old Russian violinist. He grew up in Montreal, Canada, and often performs with Sholokova. They have been friends since they met at the Juilliard School in New York City more than a decade ago.
I love playing with Nikita, and playing with Nikita reminds me the best of what music is about, and it's mostly a feeling of connection and feeling like you're on the same wave with somebody.
I think it's really important to use discernment and to find, you know, what is the source of the problem, which is Putin. And it is not the Russians, because there are so many Russians who are against this war.
The bond with Morozov is helping Sholokov deal with this moment. And to her, it's completely relevant that he's from Russia.
Well, I think it's humanity above all else. I mean, I've never seen Nikita as a Russian violinist, and I've never seen myself necessarily as a Ukrainian cellist, and I think it's mutual.
For Valeria, music is what helps her to get through the day.
Let's take a minute of silence. Thank you. This is the only thing that takes my mind off of my grief right now. There are two things, is being with people and playing music.
That's why Morozov feels like he must take care of Sholokova more than ever. Something he says everybody should do now with all the Ukrainians around the world.
I think, you know, when we go through something difficult and we're there for each other, bonds are made and connections are made, and they're much stronger because you go through something extremely difficult together and you're there for each other, and definitely the friendship becomes stronger.
A music-based friendship that transcends the war between countries. Jacopo Luzzi, VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. As always, continue with us online until our next program at the same time tomorrow. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and of course our website, voanews.com. Thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.